Hello, welcome to another episode of Mood Swings in Isolation. This is episode 8, I think, of the lockdown podcast, so I hope you've been enjoying them. This one's a much more mental health focused one, especially to do with kind of issues surrounding mental health in lockdown and whilst the coronavirus crisis is going on. The guest for this one is Helena Rifai. She runs her own podcast called Podcart, which is a music podcast. They do different types of shows. One's kind of about new music. And she also does a show called Life is Like a Box of Records, which is where she speaks to musicians and other people as well about six songs that have been significant in their life. There's been some great people on there, and I've really enjoyed listening to those ones. So if you're looking for a music podcast to listen to, highly recommend Podcart, and in particular, those Life is Like a Box of Records episodes are absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I really enjoy them. Yeah, as I said, this is more of a mental health focused one, although there's always an element of that in these podcasts. This one, we speak a lot more about particular themes to do with lockdown, coronavirus. We both speak about having both completed mental health first aid certificate. Tripping over my words there. So yeah, it was good to get back to that after some episodes that the focus had been taken away by everything that's going on in the world in a wider sense, and this episode kind of incorporates that, but very much with the mental health at the centre of it. So absolutely thrilled to have Helena on and to speak to her. The quality for this one I think is pretty good. Again, recording over the internet is never perfect. There's a couple of times I think it did maybe dip, but I think it was for such a short amount of time that you can still 100% tell what we're discussing. I mean, it's just like a split second. So apologies for that, as always, and apologies to Helena as well. I know she's a perfectionist when it comes to her own podcasts. So apologies to anyone if it bothers you, but I'm pretty sure that you'll follow the full conversation and it won't hinder your enjoyment of it too much. Okay, thank you very much for listening. Enjoy this episode with Helena. Cheers. So I'm here with Helena Rifai. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes, you pronounced it right.
I probably asked that the first time I spoke to you a while ago. How are you getting on in lockdown?
I'm probably finding it weirdly easier than a lot of people. I am lucky enough that I kind of have worked from home on and off for the last 7 years. So I'm pretty much comfortable at home. And also just, I'm very lucky that I live in quite a big flat, and I live with someone, so I've got company as well. I'm actually okay.
Yeah. How are you finding social excursions outside?
So I'm basically doing a lot of stuff within my community. I'm doing a lot of kind of errands and kind of coordinating for picking up for people and so on. So I think when you've got a purpose for going outside and you know that you're doing it for someone, then, absolutely, it's fantastic. However, I am getting this irrational rage at people that are not social distancing, and it does get my anxiety up a bit, and it does kind of peak it a bit. But I think it's just the kind of sheer kind of that people just aren't, there's no self-awareness from other people.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're doing everything that you can to try and be as careful as possible, then that's when it kind of becomes a bit tough, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's difficult. You go around, you see everyone, like, sometimes
I'll have days where you see everyone kind of observing it and it's fine, and then the next day I'll go and it'll be horrendous, or I'll go like a whole trip to the supermarket and it seems like everyone's sort of observing it and being fine, and then like right at the end someone will like ram it right up to you, or you'll see like a big huddle of people fighting over poppadoms or something. I don't know.
I had a terrible experience about a week ago. I one of my most conscious things is going for exercise but probably about 6:30-7 o'clock in the morning, because I know that it's going to be really quiet. And it sets me up for the day. And I know that you use exercise quite a lot for mental health as well. And I took a different route, which I kind of was a bit funny about, and I thought, right, you know, but I'm just going to try it just so that I know it's not, you know, it's just not good for me. And it was around a different park, and I kind of went through the park, and it was just too, even at 7 o'clock in the morning, it was just getting a bit uncomfortable. So I went around the perimeter and came out, and unfortunately I came out onto a street where there's shops, like just, you know, little kind of newspaper agents and stuff like that, news agents. And a guy was on a bike, came out of a shop, and I kind of went on the road to let him go past, even though he was on a bike. And he was like, on you go. And I was like, no, I'm waiting for you to go past. And he was like, I'm not moving. And he put his bike right across the pavement, so I couldn't go back on the pavement. So yeah, that was like probably the worst thing that's happened so far.
Yeah, strange that people do, like, obviously there's been a bit of like a shift in atmosphere when you interact with strangers, and it's weird how people are using that sort of uncomfortable energy in like a power dynamic sort of way.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah it's really strange. I notice that even when I'm out running and stuff, people, like some people, I should say, will make the effort. It's like a mutual sort of thing that goes on where you both make the effort to observe it, and then there's some people it's just not there, and it's kind of like,
how have you found running? Because that's the other issue I've been having. It's and I think it's wrong to kind of label it runners and cyclists and all that kind of stuff, but I've had a few runners now that really have not observed social distancing. So do you get quite a lot of tension from people when you're out running?
I wouldn't say so much from other people. It's more that I'm trying to like make sure I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And if people kind of don't, I suppose, give a bit back, it can be frustrating. So if you're trying to run past a group of people and you're making the effort to make sure you're not just running straight past them, and you're trying to like kind of shift it away, they don't observe that you're there at all. They just kind of all, because yeah, you do see like families and stuff out, and they'll all be kind of like taking up a whole pathway or whatever, and you're trying to get past. And obviously, normally you could just weave between them or whatever, but at the moment you don't want to do that. But I just try and run places where there's big, like down the beach in Aberdeen, it's a big wide road, it's a big wide pathway, so it's easy to have a bit more distance. I used to love running down by the river, but it's just like a thin kind of path that winds along the river, and it's really busy if it's a nice day, even now. So the people exercising, so I've kind of given that a miss. But yeah, I just try and choose my routes carefully so that I don't see as many people, and again, like you said, the time of day. But with living in the centre of town, there's not too many places where it's completely free of people.
I mean, that I think that's exactly it. It's just identifying places that are maybe just a bit less populated or a bit more spacious. So
I know you've been doing a lot of work with your project, the Sonic Hug, offering like a counseling service yourself. How's that been going, and what made you want to set it up?
So, I mean, it's been really interesting. I'd done my first aid mental health certificate a few years ago, and it actually was brilliant, because not only does it equip you with certain skills, but it also kind of gives you more logic and understanding into why you're going through what you're going through on a kind of more scientific level, I guess, at times and so on. So the people that I've been speaking to, so weirdly, there was a fantastic article that came out of someone, and I will look it up. So I can say who it is, but I've said this to a few times and to a few people now, is that when you've got, like, because I've got panic disorder and PTSD, so it's like pretty full on, and my anxiety is like it's really high functioning a lot of the time, and it's very social based, but I you know, panic attacks, but I had agoraphobia. I think we've spoken about this previously. I've been through agoraphobia as well. But in this situation, because something absolutely horrendous is happening, my anxiety has got a purpose now. So my fight or flight is kicking in for a reason, and you know, it doesn't feel like it's just for nothing. So I've been strangely a lot more calm over the last few weeks, and I'm just like, right, okay, you know, what can I do, or you know, I have to try and kind of help and so on. And a lot of the people that I've been speaking to are people that have never experienced anxiety before, or they don't think that they have, or they've never had any problems. So it's just been more of a kind of, I think they're just terrified that they've just never been through this, and they don't know, a lot of them didn't even know what it was. And I think that's one of the most frightening things when you go through, when you, for example, when you have your first panic attack and you think, oh my God, I'm dying, or I'm having a heart attack, and it's not, it's a panic attack. So, and then the people are saying to me, oh my God, how have you managed to cope with this? So that makes me quite sad that, you know, I'm hearing about this, but at the same time, it's a weird blessing to have kind of, to experience it, so that you can kind of almost flag it to other people.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of, well, like my own anxiety, a lot of it's kind of worrying about things out with your control.
Yeah.
So if you do that, like obviously a lot of mine's very irrational and a lot of the rest of the time, but at the moment, because, you know, no one knows what's going to happen, and there's such a sense of uncertainty in a massive broader scale, like it does kind of ease your own anxiety a bit. I mean, I still worry quite a lot about, you know, in patches about what might happen and the outcome of all this and things, but on a more general scale, I'm actually kind of able to stay kind of calm about it, because it does feel completely out of my control in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I agree with the part about what you're saying there about, you know, worrying about what is going to happen. And I do get pangs still, like, but it's more about when I see the death rates, when I see what's happening to the NHS, when I see what's happening in refugee camps, it's all these things that are happening. And it's just like, oh my God, I can't fathom, mm-hmm. I suppose, what these people are going through. But then it's also your loved ones as well, and you go, I just want to be safe. So I think generally people are being really selfless, but you're just getting the odd pockets of people, I guess, but that's just natural, isn't it, that you're going to get people that are just like, oh. So
yeah, there's always going to be, I suppose, outliers, but
yeah.
But then I think as well, like, there's a lot of people that must be really struggling to observe what's going on for whatever reason, whether that be mental health conditions or like addictions and things like that. And it must be really hard to make that adjustment in their lives.
Yeah. I was talking to someone last night about the addiction side of stuff, and it's like, even, I mean, obviously this is a bit off the beaten track, but it's people even going to their dealers and stuff, you know? And I mean, a lot of people are, well, why are you even saying that? But at the end of the day, if someone's got an addiction and they want a hit, then, you know, they're going to try everything to go and get that. So it's, yeah, and I guess it's like that whole discussion about prevention rather than cure then comes up, and yeah, it's quite strange.
Yeah, I think undoubtedly there's going to be probably not much hit to the drug trade.
No.
Which is sad. No. It's a strange concept that in a time where all these industries are struggling and trying to find ways to adapt, there's one industry that will probably manage to just maintain business as usual, for better or for worse.
Yeah, no, big time. Yeah, I'm kind of torn with the whole alcohol delivery as well. I see that these alcohol delivery things are starting to crop up, but I know for a fact that so many people I've spoken to have drunk every single day for 2 weeks, and they would never do that within a normal circumstance. And then you kind of start to go, right, okay, this is not good. Because I know the effects that it, you know, it does, it makes you more depressed, and it kind of, the hangovers cause like massive anxiety, and there's just that danger of complete like alcohol addiction.
Yeah. So I've been drinking probably more than I normally would, but I've been trying to make sure that I have days where I'm not drinking, or, you know, like not to drink. Otherwise, I'm just kind of accepted that I might drink a little bit more than I normally would, because I'm so free of like responsibilities now. It's kind of like a luxury to be able to do it. But I'm also trying to make sure that I don't go over the top and overindulge, because I know like a lot of the what you were just saying there about where it can lead.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The only reason I'm not drinking is because I was put on these hefty antibiotics for, I got an abscess in my jaw. And you cannot drink on these antibiotics, because otherwise it completely destroys you. And you know, it's been an absolute blessing, because I'm on like, I think I'm on day 4, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's starting to kind of create quite a lot of clarity now, which is good.
Yeah. How long are you on the antibiotics for?
Just 7 days. But it's kind of made me like really look at what I was drinking and thinking, oh, right, okay, maybe this wasn't so good. But I think that's the other thing with anxiety as well, is that, you know, sometimes alcohol can make you feel a bit more invincible, and it makes you kind of forget about things, and you feel braver at times with it. And it also creates that kind of feeling of temporary relaxation. So if you're highly strung all the time, and then say, for example, you have that first drink and you think, oh yeah, this is good. But then it's the after effects, I guess, that you kind of totally forget about. And then you go, right, I'm going to go on it again, just to kind of get back that feeling. And that's how the addiction starts. So
yeah. It's quite like, it's not to do without getting too scientific, it's to do with how the like when you're hungover, you're some like certain endorphins are depleted, and then drinking alcohol actually, like, I don't know, it boosts them, or it's like a stimulant for that side of the brain. So but at first it takes you back up to feeling level and normal again, and then of course you drink more, you get the like the effects, and it's just kind of like a balance.
Yeah,
I can't remember, I think I watched a documentary about it on the special features for the film Blow about 10 years ago. That's why I can't really talk too intelligently about it. But I can just remember this graph thing showing you how it all worked.
Yeah, it's to do with your serotonin and all those different aspects. And it takes certain things out of it does take those kind of certain aspects of your minerals in your body or whatever out when you're dehydrated and so on. But that's why they say it's so important to drink so much water when you've got anxiety as well, is because it kind of, you know, it kind of replenishes you almost. And I guess that's when you look at how much of your body is made up of water, then it kind of makes more sense that you do have to kind of drink and keep yourself hydrated, whereas alcohol kind of, it does dehydrate you.
Yeah, totally. I know you just mentioned there that you did the mental health first aid course. I've done that as well. I think it was start of this year or last year it was. How long ago did you do it? Was that a couple of years, did you say?
About 3-4 years ago now, yeah.
Because I don't think it's been offered that long, so you must have been quite early on that you went through it.
Well, I think maybe in Glasgow, because it was available more here. So I did it over a 2-day period, and I did it with a group of about 6 other people. It was up in a place near a centre of therapy in Glasgow, just up near Charing Cross. And it did cost money. It cost £75, but It was something that I kind of was conscious that I wanted to do because, like I said previously there, that I wanted to make sure, like I wanted to understand what I was going through. But what I really liked about it was that it looked in, it talks about things like addiction and so on, but also things like schizophrenia and other aspects that you maybe don't consider. And so I think it's probably one of the best things I've done. And you get your certificate, which is amazing. And I've still got like all the I got fantastic reading material afterwards from it. It's been interesting. And I think that what I was starting to kind of campaign for before lockdown was that more people were doing it, especially within the music industry. So I'm part of this organized charity called Scottish Women Inventing Music. And we're kind of looking at ways now that people can actually do it online during lockdown so that when we come out, you know, it's going to be easier for people.
Yeah, I mean, when I did it, it was with my old work. It was quite interesting to see how people that you know in a sort of professional capacity reacted to the sort of information they were receiving and gauge where everyone's understanding was, and sort of in a sense of age as well. Like there was people of all different ages on it, so it was quite interesting for me to see how people responded and how people of different age groups and things had kind of different understandings.
And how did your so for people that maybe didn't go through mental health, well, they haven't experienced mental health in the same level that we have, how did they react? Was it in a positive way to the stuff that they were kind of finding out?
Yeah, mostly. I think there was, I'm trying to remember how many people I did it with. It was quite a big group. And I think some people, there's maybe a couple didn't seem to feel particularly want to be there. There was a couple of people I think struggled with some of the quite, you know, there was quite a lot of heavy stuff throughout it in the course, and some quite the person that was doing that was presenting it was using like examples that were kind of quite local to Aberdeen and trying to use things from that would be kind of hit home with people. So I think a lot of people kind of found that hard. And then there was like a kind of couple of people who just couldn't get away from it being like a work thing and just kind of wanted to still somehow use it to kind of take out like a pop at the company, and just kind of like saying that the company was shit and it caused them poor mental health. And it's like, kind of, well, that's maybe valid, but not like the right place to raise it.
Yeah, you're always going to get that kind of, that small section of people though. So,
yeah. Would you ever look at delivering the course? I can imagine you being quite good at
doing that. maybe in the future. I mean, I think you have to go through a vast amount of training and so on. But I have been looking at career aspects over the last kind of year in particular. Because I still am finding the music industry quite tough. And I think everyone does to a certain degree. So it was, you know, counselling was something that I was looking into So I don't know. Never say never. It might happen. But I certainly will continue to really signpost and encourage people to do that certificate because I just think it's imperative. And I think if ever a time following this, I'm genuinely terrified about how much strain the mental health services are being put under, not only now, but when we come out.
Yeah.
Because I don't think a lot of people will be able to really kind of channel what they're going through, and I think to a certain degree a lot of people are going to have PTSD after this as well because of bereavements and being in these lockdown like total isolation scenarios, and it will kind of maybe just hit them at a later date, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I think it's going to be quite, people aren't going to realize how much they've been affected by this until maybe a good amount of time after, or maybe immediately after, when everyone has to start kind of, like, I think for myself, I think there's going to be a transition period where I'm going to struggle, like, socially a little bit, I think. And I don't think I'll be alone in that. I think it's going to be strange when everything goes back to normal.
Yeah.
How do you, so you just said there, just want to ask you a quick question. You said that you were working within the music industry and you found it quite stressful. Does that kind of tarnish your enjoyment of music? Because I know how much of a fan you are.
Yeah, it does, unfortunately. I mean, I don't, like, so my first love is probably listening and writing about music. That's the thing that maybe gives me the most enjoyment. Aside from podcasting, I love podcasting as well. But there have been, working in PR is the hardest thing I've done. And it's a lot of stress. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of expectation. There's little thanks. And I think that I've seen a kind of really a darker side to stuff. There's also been situations that I can't unfortunately talk about, but involving people that it's kind of just flagged that there are groups and cliques, and there are people that are kind of not very nice within the industry. And unfortunately, again, that brings a really tough aspect to things. But music is a creative outlet, and what we get to experience just listening to it is something that's amazing. And I think that kind of overshadows all the bad stuff at the end of the day, like going to see a gig or just for the first time and thinking, this is the best thing I've heard, and listening to it on repeat for God knows how long and so on. But I hope after a kind of this scenario as well, I hope that it really makes people appreciate the creative industries, because it's really taken a battering. I've lost a lot of work, but I'm by no means the worst affected. There's some people that have lost whole companies, have had to sack full workforces, and that's really, I mean, I can't even fathom that.
Yeah. It is scary to think what might happen if we're ending this lockdown for an even longer amount of time, what could happen like to venues and, you know, pretty much everyone industry-wide will take a huge hit.
Yeah.
And it's quite, I think like a lot of things you take for granted, like the lockdown kind of makes you realise that you shouldn't have, like live music and there being places for people to put on gigs. Just like everything, like gyms, etc., everything you take for granted, it's kind of shown you how easily that it can kind of disappear.
Yeah.
How have you found podcasting remotely?
You'll know. I mean, I'm very lucky. A fantastic setup. I've got a Rodecaster and I've got a Procaster mic, so the kind of quality of audio my side is fantastic, but obviously I'm not using that with you just now, but I'm doing a kind of a podcast, doing this One More Tune podcast at the moment with Ewan and Mel. And it's trying to kind of explain how much work you have to do to make it technically, you know, work. But also, I'm a bit perfectionist with the kind of sound quality and things. I think that's just having 10 years of doing it, and I become a bit anal to a certain degree. And they maybe don't understand quite as much as, well, they don't, I don't want to say understand because they'll kill me. they listen to this, but I mean, it's just more about how pedantic I am. I don't think they quite understand that. And I'm honestly bordering on OCD with it. So, do you know what? It's been an absolute blessing in terms of knowledge and learning.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've recorded telephone interviews and Skype interviews before, but I think just really nailing to get a better quality via the internet and whatever has been interesting. What about you?
Well, I'd only ever done one before over Skype years ago because I'd been asked to do it by like a local promoter that was putting on a show and they wanted like an interview ahead of the show going ahead. So I reluctantly agreed to do it and had found it a total nightmare in terms of having to use like kind of like plug-in software to get recording. And yeah, it just, I didn't enjoy it at all. And then when I was looking at doing it again because I was kind of forced to do it again, I realized it had become a lot easier than what it was or how hard I'd made it before. And I've actually found it okay. The only thing that's difficult about it is obviously you can't rely on like internet connections.
Yeah.
Too much so, and it's difficult with it. You've got to rely on your own internet connection and then other, like someone else's as well. But no, for the most part, I've been quite enjoying it, and I definitely wouldn't have been recording this amount, like this volume of stuff, if had it not been for that. So it's good to get back to doing it because I had a long, kind of, quite a few like months where I've not been able to do it as much as I'd like with other things going on. So it's good to be able to sit back and talk to people again.
Yeah. No, and that's the blessing of technology. I mean, what you can do now is fascinating. And it's even like when I look at the BBC and broadcasting and what they're doing is just insane. The quality of what their output is.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It's quite interesting to someone that listens to a lot of podcasts to see the different levels of quality that you can get, like say like the BBC and these top productions are like doing some amazing stuff, and then the lower grade is kind of a bit more like a lot of like comedians that do their own podcasts and stuff are a lot less much like myself are a lot less precious about it.
Yeah.
So you do get these kind of like not the highest audio quality and kind of tarnished. Actually, I spoke to Ewan before I started recording these because I knew you guys had done, were doing them remotely.
Yeah.
And he was letting me know about how you were recording it. And I was like, I was like, who edits this? And he was like, oh yeah, it's Helena. And I was like, so not take her like an absolute age. He's like, no, it doesn't seem too bad. I was like, it sounds like she's putting a lot of work in. So props to you.
No, the last one took me 6 hours to edit.
Yeah, so you.
And, but I've managed to kind of get it down to a couple of hours now, which is good. We tried doing it remotely and just the connections on people's parts just weren't, it wasn't happening. So we're now kind of recording our own bits and then I'm just using it as three separate tracks, which really works fantastically. And I'm doing a few kind of Life is Like a Box of Records, which we do the soundtracks that have influenced people. So I've got couple of people doing that over the next while who have got really good equipment at home, so again that's gonna probably make things much better for me. I am like a bit picky. So Ewan has no idea how much work goes into it, but that's a running joke.
Yeah, great. Well, I'll not keep you too much longer to let you get back to lockdown. But
Thank you.
Do you want to just tell everyone where they can find the Sonic Hug stuff and then all the Can Your Own podcast and all that?
Yeah, so Sonic Hug is sonichug.com and we're on all socials, just a Sonic Hug. And it, obviously if you're looking to speak to anyone, I'm doing half hour to an hour sessions, depending on what people want to do, just chatting. Podcart is just podcart.co. That's my two children, I guess, that I'm working with at the moment.
Hey, so when's the next podcart out?
It's out tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
Ace. Okay, well, thanks very much for speaking to me.
No, thank you, Nathan.
No bother. Cheers.
Okay.
Okay, thanks everyone for listening. As I said, I think at the start, I'll be back with another episode on Friday, all going to plan. And yeah, no idea when this will end or when things will change for myself, but I'm hoping to keep putting out 3 episodes a week for the time being anyway. Thanks everyone that's listened to the episodes so far. Got some big responses to a few of the episodes, and Nathan Haig one that went out on Monday, people seemed to really enjoy. So thanks very much for listening, and I'll have Nathan on again after the end of all this, and we'll do a face-to-face one and speak a bit more about everything to do with his own work and you know, the usual conversations I have with people. Yeah, thanks for listening. Like I said, I've not got much to update you on. Nothing changes for anyone in lockdown, really. I ran a half marathon today and then spent the afternoon trying not to cry at Phoebe Bridgers' live performances. So I think that kind of sums me up, the two sides of my lockdown activity, pretty well. Okay, thank you very much for listening. Stay safe, and I'll be back Friday. Cheers.